You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 15th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It is casual Friday, folks. Not so casual. President Obama still giving a speech right now. Or I should say a press conference. I'm listening to that. Forgive my lateness in the intro. Joining me, as is our wont on Fridays, is Cliff Schechter. Cliff, welcome to the program.
Samuel, thank you. How are you?
I am good. Hold on. Let's see if we can get the... we can hear you. Can we hear you?
Can you hear me okay?
You got to up me. I can't hear him that well. Yeah, I think we can hear you. So what a week, huh?
Been a hell of a week, yeah.
We've got
going on, huh?
I'm sorry?
A few things are going on out there, aren't they?
Yeah, hey, look, I'm gonna have to call you back. Will you text me your cell phone number?
Sure. Is this one sounding any better?
It's
something. Yeah, okay.
No,
I sent you my cell phone number over chat. Do you have it there?
Yeah, I do. All right, I'll call you right back.
All right, thanks.
Thanks. Sorry about this, folks. Hold on for one second. You there, Cliff? All right, here we go.
Who?
Oh, Cliff.
Hey, is there. It better?
Yeah, it is. It is better. Thank you.
Can excellent.
You turn down my headset now a little bit. Thanks. All right, now Cliff, where were we? Cliff?
Yeah, I'm hearing the noise really loud, much louder than you. The music.
Oh, you're hearing any music now?
Yes.
You are.
Now it's gone. No music. Thank. All right.
Okay.
Very good.
All right, here we go. Let's start this over again. Oh, I'm sorry. My our tech music was still going. All right, so let's this has been quite a week. Let's start with the debt ceiling. Were you watching this press conference by the president?
No, I must admit I was not. I've been following everything going on up until it, but I had some things I had to do this morning. So I can certainly speak of everything up until this last moment, unless he's changed anything.
Well, there was nothing particularly new in the press conference today, though. It's just wonderful to hear a Democratic president talk about how there's room to cut Medicare or Social Security if necessary. And then the other enjoyable part was to listen when the president said, like, you know, I'm thinking about Medicare because I'm eligible soon. Just the howls of laughter from the reporters, the idea that somebody would need Medicare is just hilarious.
Did he like borrow? I mean, I'm serious about this. Like, did he borrow the Mitt Romney talking points? The I'm unemployed like you. I mean, did these guys know how unbelievably stupid this stuff sounds?
The president was making a joke. I mean, or at least talking about it. I didn't think that was as bad as I don't know. Just the whole thing just seems it's just stunning to just watch. Everybody who
so was it,
every...
I just want to make sure. So it was an old joke. It was like a sort of a, oh, I'm headed towards Medicare. In other words, it was a joke about how old he was. It wasn't a joke that he would need Medicare.
You know, I don't know. I don't know. There was just something about it that just sort of like the prospect of it is ridiculous that the president is worrying about Medicare for him personally. And I think, you know, that's sort of like indicative. And maybe I'm getting more angry at the notion of that notion that exists in that room, where nobody in that room, nobody really has any skin in the game when it comes to talking about Medicare or Social Security. They all don't give a shit. They don't.
No, I mean, everything has been, everybody's had a just different positioning. In the end, you know, Boehner wanted to get done what he wanted to get done because he's scared, you know, he figured he can pull something through where if he could get the budget cuts, and that's why he and Obama are having these nice little secret meetings, then that would be enough that if you raise taxes or close loopholes, not really raise taxes, and not in any real way, vast majority still 3-1 or whatever, more spending cuts, might get the teabaggers to come along. But as we all know, they're crazy and aren't going to come along with anything. So that falls apart. And then you get McConnell, who really only cares about winning back the Senate and cares about the business community, who is ready to just dump it off on Obama, make Obama take a series of votes, you know, let him be the one who controls the debt ceiling, takes a series of votes over, you know, a year's time, and then they're the ones that look bad. And of course, all that Obama would need to muster up is enough votes to protect a veto if they tried to take this, if they tried to veto his raising the debt ceiling. So McConnell's playing games there too, of course, even though in playing games he offered a clean vote, which is the best thing they could get. And then on top of that, then you get the Cantor position where we can't raise taxes at all. There must be massive tax cuts. And so all these guys are on different pages and all doing stuff for political reasons and whatever. And then you've got Obama, who I'm sorry at this point, but there's no other way you can look at this. This brings me back to what I've said forever. I think I said this on your show where I've said that I was 100% sure, and I still have no doubt, that the stalking horse, that the guy they got to do their dirty work during the health care debate was Joe Lieberman. When they allowed him back into committee and to be a Democrat and everything after he endorsed McCain, it was with the, we'll come and ask you for a favor. And that favor was for him, a guy that one day, you know, thought that Medicare for those 55 and over was a great idea, and suddenly the next day was willing to filibuster it. I have no doubt that the Obama White House went to him and said, we've already made a deal that we won't do that. We need you. The left hates you anyhow. This is what we're asking from you. Everybody got mad at me when I said that and said, "Oh, you know, you're too cynical, you're too whatever." Well, if I'm so cynical on that, well, I would like people to explain what the hell's going on right now, because in the end, McConnell was willing to, even if it's for the wrong reasons, McConnell was willing to give us what was needed, and yet Obama wants this. He's all about legacy, it seems. He wanted to be the guy that reformed health care, even if it doesn't actually do any good, and the costs keep going up. He was the first guy to get a health care bill passed for everybody, you know, and everybody's been talking about it since Teddy Roosevelt, and, you know, and this feels like the same thing, you know. This is like one of these invented crises that Social Security and Medicare are going to run out. He's the guy that reformed the entitlement programs. It just seems like everything he's doing is for that.
Yeah,
me crazy.
The most interesting thing about this week to me, and, you know, like you, I'm on a bunch of these different listservs, these email lists. And like you, you know, like I read, you know, Ezra Klein to basically take the temperature of sort of the establishment left media. And
right.
I'm on one of these listservs that involves a lot of those types, you know, people who really have a problem with, you know, you and I would perceive as people who are sort of perceive themselves as the adults and are, don't like anything that rocks the boat in any way. And they're left leaning. But and the amazement to a person. Everybody was saying this McConnell proposal is great. This is and I think, you know, Lawrence O'Donnell did a piece on this, you know. The fact that Obama got McConnell into this situation, and the McConnell proposal, while maybe, you know, arguably at some political cost down the road, but not really, but certainly not from a left-leaning policy perspective. It would have, it was simply, McConnell was basically throwing in the towel here. And the idea that Obama didn't accept this and is actually trying to pursue cuts beyond the McConnell thing, has these people all seem to be there with mouth agape. None of them can understand it because in their perspective, this is just Obama trying to play to independence. But what we're really seeing here, and it has been, this is not me speaking. This is Ezra Klein speaking. This is those establishment types. They're all, you know, saying in unison, Obama believes in austerity as a means in which to grow the economy. Obama is, according to Nate Silver's calculations, he is to the right of a significant part of the Republican Party in terms of...
You know, if you were to go back 30 years ago, like, you grew up, that's right, you grew up in Massachusetts, but, you know, there were another place where there were renowned liberal Republicans coming from New England.
Yep.
You know, the old Rockefeller Republican. The guy, the people that my parents, who, you know, were generally a mixture of New Deal Democrats, Rockefeller Republicans, which really weren't very far off from each other, the Republicans they voted for, I mean, I'm thinking Jacob Javits, for example, were, you know, the what's considered a moderate Republican today is so ridiculous. You know, Dick Lugar's a moderate Republican. He was considered a staunch conservative about 15 years ago. It's so shifted. The Republicans that my parents voted for were so far to the left of Obama, like, they wouldn't be able to see him. They'd be so many miles away, so many miles to the left of him. They couldn't even know the other one was there. And that's where we are right now. And now he's to the, as you're saying, he's to the right of, like, a lot of the Republicans.
Well, let me quote. This is Krugman on the analysis done by Nate Silver in terms of the, in terms of what would be involved in this debt deal, and it, you know, in terms of the ratio between spending cuts and tax increases, what Obama has offered and Republicans have refused to accept, this is Krugman, is a deal in which less than 20% of the deficit reduction comes from new revenues. This puts him slightly to the right of the average Republican voter. And
right, 20% versus 26%, right?
And exactly, and the bottom line is, he doesn't even have to make this deal. The McConnell deal that was there, that pre-existed, would have gotten him off the hook at that point. I want to play this. Let's play this audio.
And he doesn't want to be off the hook, and I think that's the answer to health care, and that's the answer to the stimulus. I think in this recent crisis, or whatever you want to call it, fake crisis, we've seen the answer that we've all been looking for this entire Obama presidency, which tells me this is what he wants.
Right. No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, it's funny to see the people who feel like, oh, his 14-dimensional chess paid off. You got McConnell to bend, and then he basically said, "Well, I'm not going to accept that. I need to actually go meet you. You've met me halfway, and now I'm going to head down your trail and head closer to your house." Essentially,
can I ask you a question? Does 14-dimensional chess involve a pawn going over, waiting till the queen gets elderly, then beating her and taking away her her Medicare? Because if it does, then yeah, this is fantastic chess.
Let me play this clip. This is an ad against Mitt Romney. I guess that never ran. It was on Politico back in 94. But, you know, the interesting thing about this is less about what it says about Romney, although we could hear this ad in the future or some version of it. But what's really fascinating to me is, and you got to remember, in 94, may have my dates off, but I think that the governor of Massachusetts was a Republican. I think it was William Weld. And
it was. You are correct. They had a bunch of liberal Republican governors there for a while, or moderate to liberal.
Well, at that point, yeah, one of the senators was David Brooks. I mean, but here is this ad, and just it sounds like this is only from 1994. It literally, the tack that is being taken here by the Democrats literally sounds so anachronistic now in this day and age. It almost sounds like it was, you know, it's from like a, this was a lost, this was from the 1930s. This was put out by the Communist Party. I mean,
they found this with some Sanskrit
right,
somewhere.
Exactly. This was, they found this with the Dead Sea Scrolls. Here, all right, play this ad now.
Mitt Romney says he saved Bain & Company, but he didn't tell you that on the day he took over, he had his predecessor fire hundreds of employees, or that the way the company was rescued was with a federal bailout of $10 million. According to The Globe, Romney's company failed to repay at least $10 million to a failed bank, and the rest of us had to absorb the loss. Romney? He and others made $4 million in this deal, which cost ordinary people $10 million. Mitt Romney. Maybe he's just against government when it helps working men and women.
I mean,
it's like when my grandfather used to tell me how movies cost a nickel when he went to them.
Right. I mean, it just
like $4 million and $10 million these days. With when you hear about the Pentagon losing like $400 billion, they can't account for it.
Right.
Like, I mean, is that what you were referring to?
No, I was referring to the idea of Democrats actually hitting in a senatorial race. You know, the idea of a guy being, you know, sort of the rich. You know, this idea that they could actually talk about the class war in this context. And when you see the timidity of the National Democrats now on stuff like this, it's sort of stunning to me.
Well, you can only come to one conclusion at certain points here. You know, and again, it's like I feel like I have to say this every time. There's this war that goes on Twitter and in other places. You know, other social media, blogs, whatever, between, it seems, there's a group of people that literally, you know, Obama could literally waterboard somebody himself while holding a 2x4 and hitting a homeless person with the other hand. And the Obama supporters would still say, he's the best guy ever. He's still better than Michelle Bachmann. And then there's another side, you know, who I've always hated Obama, and I think they were saying it during the primary, and the moment he came in, hated him from the very beginning, and right. I didn't think gave him a chance, and we're right on him. And I don't think you and I belong, I certainly know I don't, I'm pretty sure you don't belong to either of these groups. I was a guy that in the, you know, voted for him enthusiastically. I didn't, you know, he wasn't my guy during the primaries, but once he looked like he was going to win, and even when it was down to just him and Hillary Clinton, I supported him. And you know, my guy was John Edwards, so my guy would be in prison now, but that's a whole other story.
Exactly. You and I in the same boat.
Exactly. But I would have, you know, I supported him. I was enthusiastic. I thought, you know, this guy could potentially do enormous things, once in a lifetime, once in a generation chance, with the discrediting of conservatism, his big email list and everything, all the support and the 80% approval rating when he came in, and the excitement of having an African-American president. And the stimulus got me upset, but I even forgave him for how that was conducted and thought maybe that was just something that he thought was an emergency situation. Healthcare started losing me a lot more. Well, but there's eventual point you get to with both Obama and many other Democrats, you have to start saying, you know, what is it that motivates them? And the only conclusion I can come to is that it's Wall Street. I mean, in the end, if you're not willing to hit a Mitt Romney that way, I mean, yeah, I was laughing because the numbers were so small, because if people heard about somebody making $4 million off of one of these things, I'm used to hearing about heads of hedge funds making $400 million off of ripping people off. So that's what, that struck me a little funny, too. But just, you're right, the class, the attack, and it still comes from certain people here and there. It still comes from your Bernie Sanders and Alan Grayson's running again, and there's some great Democrats who shouldn't be lumped in. You know, when I was at Networks Nation, I did this morning show that you were part of with Liz Winstead. Raul Grijalva came on, and he was terrific, and Jerry Nadler came on, and he was terrific. I mean, there are people, Shelley Pingree, who I know personally, is terrific. There are some folks here who deserve credit, but overall, it just seems like a large swath of the party at this point is as in hock to Wall Street as the entire Republican Party is. Because there's just no other, I want another explanation. I would love for someone to give me another explanation. I would love for someone to explain to me why President Obama kept Bernanke and brought in Timmy Geithner and the whole rest of the crew, and hasn't done much on foreclosures, if anything at all, and is a fan of austerity, you know, and the rest of the things that he stands for. They all seem to add up to one thing, and I would like to be wrong. I'd like to believe in Obama. I got excited about him for a little while again when he took out bin Laden. I liked when he put Sonia Sotomayor on the Supreme Court. I was excited when he signed Lilly Ledbetter. And it's not like I've never come out and said, I'm proud of this guy and what he's done. I've not been an Obama hater, and I don't want to be. But at some point, you know, you talk about listservs that we're on. You know, you and I are on some of the same listservs where a lot of progressives are sitting there having, you know, arguments about whether he's worth voting for at this point.
Right. You know? I mean, listen, from my perspective, Michelle Bachmann is worse. And, you know, Romney is worse. The real problem here is if you and you've worked on congressional campaigns, what do you do if you're a congressperson? And I was talking to Sam Stein about this, and he said that the McConnell plan, one of the things that was good about the McConnell plan is that, you know, it allows congressional Democrats to go out there and say, you know, like, I'm going to fight to protect Medicare and Social Security. How far can you take that line when the implication is that you're actually not just protecting it from Republicans, you're actually protecting it from a Democratic president?
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, it's like, at what point does this become something where, you know, at what point does this become something where you're just, you know, where you feel like you're lining up against the other side and you realize that your own side, I mean, how terrible is that? You mean you literally have to protect your flank against your own guy?
If you were, and maybe this is a premature question. It certainly is a premature question. But if you were advising a congressperson running, how would you advise them to handle this?
I would advise them to oppose it, all efforts. I mean, obviously, it depends somewhat on, you know, their constituency and the rest. But I think for virtually any Democrat at this point, not standing up for Social Security, not standing up for Medicare is a death knell. So I don't, you know, I mean, we're assuming I'm advising any Democrat. I don't know how I could advise them not to stand up to their own president, as painful and dangerous as that is in some ways. I mean, you know, that's just from a political standpoint.
Right.
From a moral standpoint, I really don't know. You know, how do you look at what's going on right now? How do you look at people making $500 billion a year and cut Social Security? I don't even understand that. That doesn't even compute with me.
All right. Well, let's pivot for a minute and talk about News Corp, which is a lot happier topic for me to talk about. Not to mention, I should also say, I know you're going to enjoy this if you haven't already heard it. But Connor Friesdorf from The Atlantic, he went to go see the opening of Sarah Palin's movie, Undefeated, Orange County, which is a hotbed of conservatism. He was the only person in the theater. I'm going to read. This is a quote. "It isn't strictly accurate to say I sat through the whole movie alone. Just as the preview started, two young women walked in giggling together and took seats three rows behind me. But they only lasted 20 minutes before walking out. After that, it is strictly accurate to say that the theater was empty except for me."
I don't know if I can add anything to the perfection that is.
Yeah, I mean, there it is. I mean, she's long gone out of the picture. Michelle Bachmann is the new Palin, and
there's a long line. You know, it's like Coulter to there needs to be a right wing, you know, incendiary, idiocy spouting, not on the right, and preferably a woman that all these middle aged fat guys sitting around who have nothing but Rush Limbaugh running on a loop for 24 hours a day can fantasize about while hating everybody else. It seems that Bachmann now fits in that category best. But soon we'll have somebody else, I'm sure.
Can I take a venture that Mike Rogers is spending 80% of his days now trying to find one guy who hooked up with that hooked up with Marcus Bachmann in the Minnesota airport? I mean,
I would really hope so. You know, we know the bathroom it happened in. We know where it was going on. I certainly I certainly would hope that's the case, because really there could be no better venture than that. I mean, the guy literally, when he's talking about homosexuality, seems pained. It's a temptation you must resist.
They are barbarians. It's barbaric, what they do.
Yeah, I know. What I did last night was, I mean, he literally seems like he's clenching his hands. He's trying to sit there in the chair so he doesn't literally thrust himself forward at any random male in the area and just bite their pants down.
Well,
so
let's move on to this News Corps stuff, because this is fantastic. It's being reported now, the most recent reports as of this morning, I guess. The Attorney General is in Australia, and he said there have been members of Congress in the United States who have asked us to investigate these allegations about News Corps potentially hacking into people's voicemails, other techno crimes they may be involved in, and we are progressing in regard to using the appropriate federal agencies in the United States. The FBI has launched a full-scale investigation in them. Quote, this is a source with a, we're not quite sure if they're in the FBI or they're in the Justice Department. We'll be looking at anyone acting for on behalf of News Corps from the top down to janitors to gather information and determine whether any laws have been broken. This coming after Rebecca Brooks has resigned from News Corps. What do you think? I mean, I got to imagine this could go either one of two ways. Either one, Murdoch has such power in this country still that we see a whitewash, or the Obama administration, the Department of Justice, is just salivating at the notion of no Fox News in the second term.
Well, again, it's sort of like if I knew that we had a good sort of political partisan who did what was best for himself, then this would be an easy call. Because we're dealing with Obama, who so many times has let his opponents off the hook and not, literally had them up against the ropes and not chosen to take the final punch. I don't know. But, I mean, I would think this is like a dream come true. These are guys that criticized Fox. You know, tried to have certain, what was it, their certain credentials revoked when they first came into office. I mean, this is literally one of the key parts of the machine that spews garbage about Obama and literally makes him toxic to huge groups of Americans every day. I would think that you would, you know, he has nothing to lose. They hate him already. They criticize him constantly already. They make up lies about him already. Their whole, like, nighttime news block is one giant conspiracy theory about how terrible Obama is. So there's nothing to lose there, you know? So it seems to me the common sense is, I mean, my God, this guy is literally, I mean, they're under siege right now, and I have no doubt in my mind as to when the point is going to come that we're going to find out that they hacked into Americans' phones, whether it was British tabloids doing it to American 9/11 victims for themselves, as they did the British victims, of war and obviously the little girl that was kidnapped and murdered. But that's either going to happen, or we'll find out that it's not even just News of the World, that it's other News Corps properties based here in the good old US of A. But I have no doubt that they did it. There's no way that was going on at one place and it wasn't going on at others. Behavior like that doesn't tend to be limited when the marching orders and the sort of culture comes from the top. So this should be such an easy call.
Yes,
really, getting rid of Fox News would make his presidency so much easier on every, but then there have been other things. I mean, you'd think that Republicans taking that Paul Ryan vote would put you in a position where you've got this great line drawn. They want to kill your Medicare. We don't. Going to the 2012 elections on that, and what do we see? We see Obama trying to muddy that up by cutting Medicare himself. So, I mean, it's like, to me, every time these guys are thrown an underhand pitch or thrown a softball, they swing and they miss. So I don't really know what to fully expect.
All right. Well, Cliff Schechter, we're going to outro you with the Jimmy Reefer Cake song that we forgot to intro you with. Thank you again for joining us, as always, on Friday. Always a pleasure. And
always my pleasure too, Sam. Thanks, bud.
Here's the song. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Chris Rosen.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schachter, Libertas LLC.
Thanks again, guys.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back, folks. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with Chris Rosen.
MovieLine.com. Big shot senior editor, eh? Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob. Jimmy Riffin Cakes got to ask. He said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you?
Who are you applauding to back there?
Jimmy Reefer Cakes, I'm applauding.
No, but I mean, the people in your apartment?
My girlfriend's here, but I mean, I was just applauding Jimmy Reefer Cakes.
Does she watch, does she listen to the show live? Or is
no.
She just like, she's, no.
She podcasts it.
She podcasts it?
Yeah.
Now, Cliff.
Sincere.
What's that?
I'm very sincere about that, too.
Yeah.
So what's doing, Sam?
I was on vacation last week. We didn't speak, right?
I don't think we did. Last time we talked, I suggested a couple of good movies for you, I believe. It was Catching Hell. It was the Alex Gibney documentary about Steve Bartman and The Right Stuff about astronauts.
Yeah.
The last time we talked, actually, you were in your bomb shelter. So when we didn't talk last week, I was a little nervous. I was like, maybe Sam went, you know, native or something. I don't know. Grew a beard. Ted Kaczynski did.
I didn't watch Catching Hell. I did end up watching Black Swan, though.
Oh, what'd you think?
I actually quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love that movie. I think it's a good thriller. It's a very good, nice throwback, I feel like.
Yeah, it was a nice throwback, and I thought it was pretty good. It was a little bit, almost a little bit disturbing.
Yeah, it was. It was very, the last half hour or so was very tense. I would say that's like one of the way it's edited and stuff. That's one of the tensest, you know, little last acts I've seen in years. I thought it was really good.
Now, of course, I didn't need you to suggest that to me because, I mean, I know Darren Aronofsky.
Right. Is it Name Drop Friday?
Name Drop Friday.
I mean, I don't, you know, I don't talk to him anymore, but.
You could text him, though. He'd probably know who you are.
Oh, no. He would definitely know who I am.
Yeah. You could get a drink with him or something.
Yes. We used to have drinks together.
He's doing a new movie called Noah about Noah's Ark.
Don't care.
You could be in it, maybe.
Don't care. No. Highly doubtful.
Maybe you can play Moses.
No, he's just another one of those guys who resents me so much based upon a perceived notion of my success, which doesn't exist. Chris.
Sam.
We've got a little bit of a problem. Netflix is getting a little bit annoying lately. But
yeah, I know. We might have to drop Netflix because they're being a bunch of Scrooges.
Well, also, you know, Sony, you know, like half the movies, Black Swan wasn't on Netflix. They disappeared off of Netflix.
It's getting bad, and they upped their prices this week, so that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, that is a bit of a problem.
Yeah.
Got to decide between streaming or DVDs.
Well, I went with an Amazon recommendation this week in protest of Netflix because, you know, whatever.
Well, that's sort of ridiculous because the segment calls for an Amazon.
I went Amazon because I believe if you're Prime, I think it's free, this one. Yeah.
No, there's supposed to be a Netflix and an Amazon.
No, there's supposed to be a Netflix and a Time Warner On Demand.
No, not Time Warner On Demand. We
or
changed
any
that
demand.
A long time ago.
Well, I did it. I did On Demand, and you could do that, and then we could have two Amazons then.
I got to watch Dogtooth. Someone just said they'll become a member once I do that. All right, so you know what Dogtooth is?
Yeah, I didn't see it, though.
No, of course not.
Is that the Lawrence von Trier one?
Oh, shut up. What Lawrence von Trier?
Lawrence von Trier? I've never seen those, but Lawrence von Trier I've heard of.
Lars von Trier.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. I was going to say. What have you seen?
He said none of his. I don't like his stuff. Dancer in the Dark. None of it really looks like it appealed to me, honestly.
Have you watched one of them ever?
No, because I just don't think it looks like appealing. It doesn't look appealing to me.
You don't feel any professional obligation to
not really.
Of a guy who started, you know, sort of one of the most interesting movements in film over the past 20 years.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you can. I'm
just curious as to how that works in your head, like. When you decide, like, as a movie reviewer...
I just didn't like the way it looked. I'm not a movie reviewer.
You know, I know everybody talking about this, and they sort of define the idea of digital filmmaking, created a whole new movement, and, you know, something that will actually be in the history books of film when they study it. I mean, better or for worse. I just don't feel like it.
I didn't feel like it. You know, it just didn't look like something I liked.
But I'm just curious, do you have any professional obligation?
No, I don't. I'm not a movie critic. I don't have to, I don't review, if I, it's not like I'm reviewing
movies.
Wait a
second, you're the senior editor of MovieLine.com. What is your job there?
Senior editor, not movie critic.
What is senior editor involved?
Well, like,
I'm the guy when all the monitors get dusty at the office. I'm the guy who goes around.
What it is.
What is it?
An editor. You edit stuff. You know, I pitch stories. I farm out stories to my other writers.
Well, so
I edit their
stories. When it comes time to farm out stories, have you ever farmed out a story like, hey, maybe we should cover this whole huge movement?
No, yeah, we cover Lars von Trier all the time. But I mean, I don't have to write about his movies in specific because I haven't seen them. I wouldn't write about something I haven't seen.
What was the last story that you wrote about on MovieLine.com?
Today it was about The Hobbit. But about Lars von Trier, it was all the stuff in Cannes that when he said about everybody being – when he was
wrote about him in Cannes, but you didn't – you've never seen a movie of his?
Because it wasn't about his movies. It was about his statements saying that, you know, Hitler was right.
Oh, first of all, that is not true. That is not
– Yes, I know it's not true that Hitler is not right.
No, you're missing – no. Can I have my 360, please? There you go. Yeah, God, unbelievable.
I know he was joking around, but that was the story, so we wrote about it a little.
Ugh.
Did you hear that story? I mean, do you know what
I'm talking about? Yeah, I listened to the comments.
It was just a joke. He made a bad joke. I mean, like, right. It didn't go over well. It was totally made a big deal out of, so that's what we wrote about.
Yeah,
that it was a big deal.
Do you hear yourself speaking? Like,
yes.
You have, like, not only do you have lack of complete integrity as
I have total integrity,
but also just from a media standpoint, you have.
Why?
That
was a story. It was a story. You can't tell me that wasn't a story.
It was a story, but you're basically saying, like, I know it was a bunch of bullshit, but we had to write about it because it was bullshit.
Well, that's what we wrote about, that it was a bunch of bullshit.
Ugh.
What are the overblown.
What are you suggesting today?
Ugh. You're so bad at that. I have on Amazon. I have it's a movie. I don't know if you saw it. It came out a few years ago. It was also at Cannes. That's a nice segue. It's called 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. It's a foreign film, Romanian.
You ever watched a foreign film?
A lot, and I've seen this one. It's great. It's about a woman trying to get an abortion in 1987 Romania, and it's illegal. And the steps that she and her friend go to do this abortion, and it's basically told like through her friend's eyes. Who's trying to, like, do anything she can to get her
friend. Did your girlfriend tell you to suggest this?
No, I don't think she's ever seen it. I saw it, like, 3 years. It's old. It's an old movie. It came out, like, 4 years
ago. What is the name of it again?
4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days. It's actually great. I don't know if it's new on Amazon, but when I went over to Amazon to research this segment, I saw it pop up, and I was like, oh, that's a great movie.
I'm completely disoriented because that actually sounds like a good suggestion.
It's a great movie.
I don't even know how to respond to it.
It's very tense. It's
all right.
Very tense.
4 months, 3 weeks, 2 days. Okay.
Yeah, and it's shot, and the way the guy does it, it's like in very long takes. It might only have like 10 cuts the entire film. So it's just like in a room, like with the camera stationary and like them like going back and forth.
Is there another movie that reminds you of in any way?
For me, it was like Children of Men, but I
no,
mean.
No, that shooting, the way you described that shooting. I'm just curious.
Am I supposed to say Who's the Caboose?
No.
No, I mean, I told you, it reminded me of Children of Men, which came out a little before.
Was it
or actually around the same time.
Was it Rope?
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah, Rope, sure.
Yeah, sure. Hitchcock. Yeah, whatever, it doesn't matter. Movie. I don't know the guy. The fat guy. The fat guy. The fat guy. Not the guy.
No,
who
I
did
love
the,
Albert Hitchcock.
Not the guy who did the wine commercials. The other fat guy.
I love Alfred Hitchcock.
All right, what's
well,
the other suggestion? Like, what's the other suggestion?
I do think I thought of Children of Men. The other suggestion is on demand. It's a more mainstream one. Source Code. It came out earlier this year. Not a lot of people saw it. Did you see it?
Source Code. What's that?
It's a sci-fi kind of thriller from the guy. It's Duncan Jones, who's David Bowie's son. He directed Moon. Did you see that movie?
No.
With Sam Rockwell. And it's kind of like Jake Gyllenhaal is in it. He plays a guy. What's up?
What's up?
I just hear talking in the background. I just wanted to say.
I think you should have just recommended Moon instead of whatever you're recommending.
Oh, supposedly we interviewed him on Marin VC.
I liked Moon, but I mean, like, I like Source Code, too. I thought it was great. It's a lot of fun. Jake Gyllenhaal is a military guy. There's a train bomb on a bomb on a Chicago train. It goes off, and he keeps getting sent back in time.
No, see Moon, Sam, today.
Don't see Moon. See Source Code. It's a good movie. Whoever that's talking, you're wrong. It's a good movie. So, give me a break.
Matt, this is the senior editor of MovieLine.com. Matt, you really think that you're in a position
Moon,
to tell him?
But I think Source Code is a good movie. It's a lot of fun. Moon is good, too. You could see both. They're very short. They're only like 90 minutes.
All right.
But, I mean, I like Source Code. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's very good. It's like a Twilight Zone episode.
All right. Fair enough. Well, Chris Rosen, I think you did a decent job.
I'd say I did a great job.
I think
I'm patting myself on the back.
I mean,
just patting myself on the back.
The exact format of the thing, but that's fine.
I follow the format. I'm sure you can get Source Code on Amazon. It's out on DVD right now.
Whatever. Okay.
Patting on the back.
All right. I'm going to have to say goodbye to you right now.
Have a good weekend, Sam.
We've got some wrap-ups. You too, Chris. Thanks for joining us.
Talk to you next.
Wait, no. Let's just go into, we're going to get we got the songs of the week. First up, ladies and gentlemen, let's play Screaming Majority's Murdoch on the Line. This is a great one, folks. Another great one from Screaming Majority. This is our recap of the week. And, of course, the Murdoch story, a huge story. I don't think this one's going to go away for a long time. Here is David Benjoya, and his Screaming Majority.
Trying to call you, baby. I want to make you mine. Each time I call you, baby, I give Rupert Murdoch on the line. Need to hear your sweet voice, ease my worried psyche. Each time I hear,
what's all this noise? Wallabies, crikey, pigeon woo, that's not news. Don't you have a dead relative or two?
Try to call you, baby, I tell you you're so fine. Each time I call you, baby, I get Rupert Murdoch on the line.
50 large pizza pies with extra Vegemite. Send them to the BBC. Hold on. I've got a call on the other line.
Hello, Ruth. David Cameron here. Got any dirt on my political enemies?
Well, the former Prime Minister has a young son. The boy is very, very sick.
Why, that's wonderful. But word's gone out that you've been hacking phones, and some of the sticklers have got their knickers in a bunch.
Oh, no. The jiggeroo's gone buggeroo.
Try to call you, baby. Tell you that I'm dying.
That's more like it.
Each time I call you, baby, I get Rupert Murdoch on the line.
Stop the presses. No, seriously, stop them. We've been busted. We're shutting down. Prince dead anyway.
Rupert Murdoch on the line. Rupert Murdoch on the line. Rupert Murdoch on the line.
Fantastic, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, just a tour de force by Screaming Majority. They actually have two songs this week. The second one is Da Dumb Money about the Republican presidential clown car primary. Let's listen to that right now.
Smart money goes on Romney, even though everybody knows that he's a phony. But what about the dumb money? What about the dumb money? What about the dumb money? Where does it go? Sarah Palin's just yanking your chain. Harry's scary and a Herman Cain. He's the candidate with godfathers. He's the pizza. Gary Johnson says some good things. I haven't heard of him either. Waiting for the one true believer. The small money goes on Romney, even though everybody knows that he's a phony. But what about the dumb money? What about the dumb money? What about the dumb money? Where does it go? Gingrich and Santorum, those bigots. Good thing for us, they aren't even in it. Tim Pawlenty, God love him, he's in it still. It's the 5% growth through sheer force of will. But there's really no one like you share. Small money goes on Romney, even though everyone can tell. The dumb money's from Michelle.
Yes. Bravo. Love the the overtones or the undertones of the Velvet Underground.
They had me before the horns, but the horns really just yeah.
Horns can go either way. The horns sound like one of those things that like one of the producers, I can't remember, the guy who did the Super Session Cooper Bloomfield, I can't remember exactly who the Super Sessions, you know, they lay those horns in later after all the musicians have left.
Yeah,
and they're
we
should put some horns in. Yeah, just don't tell the guys.
It reminded me of like Catch 22 or those the New Jersey ska groups that were around when I was growing up.
Huh.
It was good.
Catch 22, never heard of them.
Oh man.
All right, and now, ladies and gentlemen, this week's Jimmy Reefer Cake song. I don't know what to say. Jimmy, let's listen to it right now.
What you got to say?
We got a problem. It's actually broken. I'll play it right now, okay? I'll play it from here.
Our headphone amp went out.
What you gotta say? How reefer? I like smoking reefer. I think reefer is good. No one's got a problem with smoking reefers in my neighborhood. Now it's true, no matter what you do, it's reefer madness. Hey, hey, reefer madness for you. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. Reefer madness for you. Everybody in this country. That's right. You can take a pill to get your dick hard, but you can't smoke a little pot. Bullshit.
There it is. Reefer madness. I quite like the song.
He's very passionate in the song. Very passionate.
There's a lot of passion. I like the the maniac accent. You can get your dick hard at the end.
You can get your dick hard, but you can't smoke a joint. You can get your dick hard. Not 100% sure how it ties into the news of the week. But Jimmy sometimes uses just as a platform for tell us what's on his mind. And it seems to be each week, it seems to be about pot.
I have to say, it's amazing we took that long to play that Cliff Schechter song, though. That was A+.
That Cliff Schechter song is very good. Well, it was a couple of weeks ago. It was a vacation. I was in, it was two Fridays. I think I've been manning the machine, and that's it's too difficult for me to do that. Well, all right, folks, that is our program. You can join me in the post show at Majority FM. Still got a couple of stories to talk about. Once again, if you can become a member, I realize at this point, falling on deaf ears, but go out, tell some people about the show. We had such an amazing show this week. Are you kidding me? This week on the program, we had... Where's my list? How did I look at the list of people who were on this program this week. I can't believe it. I watched Olbermann last night. We had almost all those guests on the whole week.
And he didn't have Rupert Murdoch and Catherine Harris.
Well, Janine was on. Janine was on last night.
I don't know what you're trying to say there. We had Catherine Harris.
Oh, I love the attitude. I love the commitment.
I don't know what Janine has to do with Catherine Harris. I don't know what you're trying to imply there.
Brian Boitler was on this week. We had Sam Stein on this week.
Did he have anybody talking about the Guardian story with the CIA and the vaccination?
Nope.
We did.
Nope. Van Jones this week. Oh, my God. Elise Hoag on the Murdoch scandal. Oh, I just... Stunning. Stunning. What this program gives you on a week-in, week-out basis. Shocking. I think on Monday, I'm not 100% sure, but I think we're going to have John Nichols and someone else from The Nation talking about this big Alec dump. What is Alec? What is dump? You're going to have to tune in on Monday to find out. All right, folks. Have a great week. I will talk to you on the flip side. We'll take your phone calls, take your IMs. Have a good one.